Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, and welcome to a new episode of Talking Snooker with Phil Haigh and Nick Metcalf, live from Manchester to once again talk about the game we all love.
Yeah, unfamiliar settings here, aren't we? We're in a hotel lobby after one of the great sporting occasions of the calendar, as some people are calling it. Not that many people are calling it, but some people.
Probably only a handful, if we're honest, Phil. Quite a smallish handful. But yes, we have just played the Tony Meo Trophy. And, well, despite my bravado talk on social media and elsewhere at times, I am really one of the perpetual runners-up. Yet, I have claimed victory. I don't quite know what to do. Winning is not something I'm that accustomed to, but it couldn't have been more dramatic, could it? I mean, we're going to joke about snooker being the winner, but goodness me, I won it 4-3 by doubling the final black to win it, Phil. I needed pink and black in that final frame, and I got them, you know, and it was just brilliant all the way. We've just been trying to sort of tally up the frames and how they went again. 5 out of 7 went to the black. I mean, the first one was, Phil, during the first frame, we were joking that everyone would be turning over to loose women. And they'd get huge ratings. But by the end, if it had been on television, people would have been gripped. It was great stuff. And 5 out of 7, that's quite something.
Yeah, it was nuts, really. I think them all going to the final ball potentially makes it sound quite bad. But I think, like you say, the first one wasn't great. But after that, it was just drama, drama, drama. And yeah, that last frame, I guess we'll just go through the match, but the last couple of balls, last frame, I thought I was in pretty safe, you know, I didn't have much to worry about until it was match up. So yeah, no, congratulations to you. But yeah, it was tense stuff from the start, wasn't it?
It really was, and you know, I'll level you now, Nav, on it. I did say to you, for about the last frame and a half, I started not to enjoy it as much, because my belief went, just like it did. And I was gutted to lose in Leeds last year, because I think I just started to think I might win that one. But it's just I know it sounds silly, because it's like, well, it's not, say, not important sport, but of course it's not in the grand scheme. But even if you're doing something like this, your belief and confidence is a big part. And I just felt like it goes for me. And I felt it slipping away again today, but somehow I managed to hold it together to win. But yeah, the first one was bad, really, in terms of standard. you won it on the black. The next two, well, amazingly, really, you went in and off on the black on both occasions, didn't you? They were both tricky shots, in absolute fairness. I'm not just saying that. They were quite tricky shots. One was perhaps worse than the other. You followed in a bit with it. But that put me 2-1 ahead. And I think that in a way, you know, was a bit fortunate in my favour, in truth. But obviously, gave me a real boost.
Well, yeah, I mean, certainly don't want to take anything away from your victory by any means, because you fully deserved it. But my propensity to stick the white in a bucket is quite remarkable. I don't know how many times I've popped the white today, but it was nuts. And two frames doing it on the final black to lose the frame was, you know, I mean, obviously no one to blame but myself for that. But I did feel like I was going mad at one stage. Went in off the break on one frame. Like, I felt like a magnet in there. But
well, you went off the break on two frames. You did one...
Two of them, actually, yeah.
You went straight off the pack, and then another time you back the white one into the one of the bolt pocket, the green pocket, color.
Yeah, it's a dreadful habit of mine. I think I actually sorted it out by the last couple of frames. I don't think I fouled at all in the last couple of frames, but I do tend to give away a lot of points, which is just very frustrating. But yeah, only myself to blame on that front. Yeah, there was one with the rest earlier, the fine black. I think that was the second frame, but I needed like all the colours, didn't I? I think I needed to put all the colours. You were that far ahead, and I did, and then just followed in the final black. So, yeah, silliness from me, but you've got to learn these lessons?
Well, the two frames that were comfortable and not black ball frames were both won by you. The one that went 2-2, then I went ahead as well, played really well to go 3-2 ahead, I thought, if I say so myself. And then Phil came back, you won that comfortably, didn't you, Phil, for 3-3? And then the decider, well, it was nip and tuck all the way, it really was. As I say, I didn't have much confidence needing pink and black, but again, if I say so myself, the pink, which I did go for on the cushion, was what a good shot. But then I have to say, we caught up, it was very tense. We did catch ourselves just then laughing at each other because the white went perilously close to going in. I was just faced with a bit of a horror shot, really, which I don't think is very professional, actually. Obviously, I'm not a professional, but I don't think stopping and taking a photo of the table was the best preparation. I thought, why am I doing this? I've talked myself into an even harder shot. The black was at one end, the white in the pocket, but I actually played an okay shot. Got a bit lucky when that save. Then we had a bit of to and fro, didn't we? And eventually, as I say, I did spot the double and, yeah, got it. I'm not a big double fan, actually. It wasn't a double to middle either. I think double to middle are the better ones, but it was a... It went in, and yeah, I mean, I didn't take the trophy home, did I, Phil? Because that's how surprised I am to be winning it. But we are close in standard, aren't we? And that makes snooker fun, doesn't it? I mean, it's not nice when you lose; it's much better when you win. But it makes it's sort of fun when you're kind of level pegging in that sense.
Oh yeah, it's got to be. There's no point. I mean, if you play someone who's much better than you, you might learn more, but. It's no fun playing someone who's much better or much worse than you. It doesn't really matter the standard as long as it's close. And yeah, you don't get much closer than 5 out of 7 frames going to the final black. So, no, it was really enjoyable. And some decent stuff in there, you know. We're not great, obviously. But it's definitely improved each year, I thought. I don't think we missed too many stinkers. And some amazing parts in there. As I say, those final two. Like you mentioned, that pink... I didn't even really think you were going to take it on, and then hammered it in along the cushion, which was amazing. And then the double, yeah, I mean, that was... you very graciously said afterwards, well, there's a bit of luck with the double, but you were fully going for it, so fair play.
I think doubles is a hard one to think for totally amateur people like us. I always think there's an element of luck, isn't there? More, I suppose that even the pros would say there's an element of luck with all doubles, but I just think, you know... No, it's not a hit and hope. I did go for it, but I think there's, I don't know, they're funny ones. But yeah, well, I mean, what a way to win it. I should say, Phil, that we thoroughly enjoyed our afternoon, didn't we? And we were very well looked after. We did want to record, didn't we, over the road at the Stephen Charles Snooker Centre, but it's just a little bit too noisy, isn't it, really? People are enjoying their Friday evening. It's very hot here in Manchester, which we did laugh about. Only we could play in a heat wave. Inside on one of the hottest days, but there we were, but full, wasn't it?
That shows how popular it was that we couldn't record in there, because we got in there before midday and I think we had the one spare table, and there's probably, what was that, 8 or 10 tables in there, and they were all full for most of it. And actually, interestingly, I thought, because there were as many pool tables, but the snooker was full, there was probably only one or two pool tables taken, which is pretty unusual when you go into places these days. So that was very encouraging. And there was loads of people on the beers in there from quite early as well. Yeah. So yeah, we were going to record in there, but it was just too popular and too noisy. So that's a good thing for the snooker scene in Manchester, for sure. It was doing very well in there. Everyone was very nice, weren't they?
They're very friendly.
Conditions were good. So shout out to the Stephen Charles Snooker Centre. We just sort of picked that a bit random because you were in Liverpool last night. I came from Sheffield, so sort of in the middle. Didn't do too much research, but I thought we struck on something pretty good there.
We did, and thanks to Steph, the manager there, and everyone, as I say, for being so kind to us. And a bit shameless from me, wasn't it, at the bar at the end? I said, has everyone seen this? Has anyone not seen this?
Me, he was showing off the trophy.
Pointing to the trophy. Absolutely ridiculous scenes. But, of course, we are aware that we do have international listeners, and, you know, I don't want to patronise it. Everyone knows the name Manchester, but, you know, we should maybe expand a little bit more. We are, as I say... across the road in the Park Inn Hotel, lovely hotel here, just over the road from the Stephen Charles Snooker Centre, just a few minutes away from Manchester Victoria Railway Station. That's where I arrived in today from Liverpool. This is, of course, one of the UK's truly great cities, an industrial and cultural powerhouse. And it has to be said, Phil, one of the world's great sporting cities. And that's led, of course, by this city's two Premier League football clubs. Manchester United are one of the most famous sporting institutions in the world. Their story is, I think, a compelling one across many generations. United recently enjoyed a phenomenal period of success under their former manager, Sir Alex Ferguson. But of course, it's now City who are the best team in the country. They won the last three league titles and the European Cup. So it's such a stronghold of football, both in this country and internationally. There's also a test cricket ground here in the city at Old Trafford, a top division rugby league team down the road in Salford, and close by, Rugby Union's Sale Sharks. And more relevantly for us, Phil, most relevantly, this city will once more host snooker's biggest stars when the Tour Championship is played this season at Manchester Central, which you said before is going to be great because, you know, the connections here are marvellous, aren't they? You know, I'm not a driver, so I'm always aware of sort of trains, and that they're particularly good. There's great bus services as well. So let's hope, you know, that I know it wasn't very successful with Hull. We said it might have been given longer, but let's hope that this tournament in this special sorting city can really deliver.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm pretty sure Manchester Central is actually really near here, but I mean, as the name would suggest, it's very central, which we speak about a lot. Like, sometimes the venues are a bit in outposts or smaller cities or stuff, but this one, when the Tour Championship comes here, it's a big major city and it's bang in the middle of it. So if we can't sell tickets here, then we might be struggling. And there's things to do as well, you know. There's two massive universities. Maybe you could do some student ticket deals or something, get younger people in. So, yeah, there's great scope for big success when the Tour Championship comes here. And, yeah, as you say, with the sporting heritage here, if we can't succeed here, we might be struggling in most places. So that would be great to see, especially with tournaments expanded, isn't it? It's out from 8 to 12 people, so 12 players. So, yeah, no, that's going to be great to look forward to. I'll certainly be coming over. It's only an hour from Sheffield. As you say, it's easy connected to everywhere. So, yeah, amazing. Yeah, there's bits of... Wasn't the World Championship final held here one year back in the day? So there is some snooker origins here as well, but not so much recently. So it'd be nice to revive that with what has become sort of one of the biggest and best events on the calendar. That's for sure, Tour Championship.
Very much so, Phil, you're absolutely right. And there is some history, and it reminds me that the 73 tournament was certainly here, because there's that great photo that often does the rounds. I think we may have put it on our Twitter feed as well, which was actually held at the City Exhibition Halls, as was called then. Looking up now, it's actually the Science and Industry Museum, so it is still a venue in Manchester. But yeah, there is some snooker history there. And actually, there was that English Open, wasn't there? Heard the rain on the roof, not that, what, 6-7 years ago? I don't know, quite know. Well, they didn't persist with that. I thought that was perhaps a decent venue. They haven't quite found a home for the English Open, and I would argue, not certainly not a permanent one. But anyway, it's back here, and if we're British, Phil, as a glass broke, we should really give it the whole...
I have to restrain myself not to wear.
You're not as childish as me. We really look forward to that tournament. I say this is a great sports city, a great city full stop, and it's a real honour for us, I think, to play here. I think London, Leeds and Manchester, we've done the UK justice so far, hopefully.
Yeah, definitely. I think we can tick it off the big cities, haven't we? Although we were talking about Swaddling Coat next year, so it's not quite on the same level of great city, but it'll be a nice segue into what we're about to talk about, I suppose, now, from the home of snooker and Swaddling Coat, Potters.
Well, absolutely, and we should say, Phil, a bit of a bidding war, the Tony Meo Trophy. They're all wanting it, and Dave Gilbert, you know, is insisting that he hosts the event, and of course, I'm absolutely delighted to say that he put an extra prize up, hasn't he, for us today, which I'm so grateful for. An absolutely beautiful cue, Phil, which we're looking at now. You can maybe put your best descriptive hat on it, Phil. You surprised me when you came over with this today. And I feel so delighted because I actually did want a cue, and this is just the most beautiful cue. So we thank you, Dave, very much indeed. I'm going to contact him later myself. I know you will, Phil, to say, you know, it's such a surprise. And, you know, just I'm so happy to be bringing this home to London, basically.
It's a lovely piece of wood, yeah. I spoke to Dave, well, and he said, and I said, oh, I could borrow a cue, because he's launching Potter's Snook Club in Swan and Coat, is Dave's club, which he launched with a couple of friends, doing exceptionally well, great club. And a new part of their business venture is Potter's Cues, and they're doing cases and extensions and paraphernalia, but obviously mainly the cues. And when I knew he was launching it, I spoke to him and I said, oh, I could borrow a cue for you to play in the Tony Mio and give a shout out on the podcast. But he said, no, I'll give you one, but the winner of the Tony Mio gets to keep it. So when I got it from Potter's yesterday, I'm delighted to be handing it over to Nick. A bit disappointed, not going to lie. Yeah. I would love to be having that myself.
Yeah.
But Nick's the worthy winner. And yeah, I mean, if I can describe it, lovely sort of, what colour would you call that at the bottom?
Well, it's
the butt's got a lovely colour on it.
It's partly black, isn't it, I think? And it's kind of a couple of different shades of brown and some blue in there as well. It's a beautiful piece of work, actually. Yeah. I mean, it's not faux human. I don't really feel worthy of having a cue specialist, if I'm honest. I mean, I look after it very carefully. I mean, it's just, I've always been a borrowing a cue from the club man, as I did today. So just to have it, and it feels so beautiful. The difference between this and just the average cue.
We were playing with some pretty old sticks today.
Yeah, I'll just do my best, but you know, I consider myself a pretty good man when it comes to language, but it's hard to describe the difference. It just feels so beautiful, and just you just realise kind of what the pros are handling when they're playing, and it must, you know, must just be lovely for them. They're obviously more used to it, but this is just, yeah, lovely. And we thank you very much, Dave. I'm the proud owner now of a Potter cue, and yeah,
which I will say as well, I think that it's not launched yet, so this is one of the first Potter's cues that's gone anywhere. 17th of September is when their website's launching, so I'll give them a shout then. If you're looking for any new equipment, then give them a visit. Dave plays one himself, so he's not flogging sort of daft cues, like he's using it himself in tournaments, so they're very good. So yeah, shout out to Potters, and thanks again for providing a brilliant prize.
Tell us about Dave yesterday. You went to see him. What sort of forms are he in? And you know, he obviously got some plenty of big matches to come, as all the players have with you. Busy autumn.
Yeah, I popped in to see him at the club, and he was telling me he had all sorts of tip problems. His tip split, and he had quite a few on in the last 2 days, so he was saying he wasn't going to play well. And then he went and beat Dean Young 4-1 and knocked in four big breaks, I think, one turn and three half centuries. So you never know with snooker players. Sometimes they're like, oh, I'm playing dreadful. It's like, their level of dreadful is not that bad. So no, he's had a lot of good results so far this season. He's playing well. So I think he's going to have a good campaign. It's been pretty reliably good so far. Looked good last night in English Open, so it'll be there in Brentwood. I mean, he's always moaning about something. He's a bit of a glass half empty character. but no, he's playing well, looking good. So yeah, no. And again, thanks for him for being so supportive of the Tony Mio trophy.
No, it's brilliant, and good use of the Tony Mio there from you. I like that. And well, we should maybe put the old Tony Mio to bed, but just say a few more bits. I did laugh. One of the chaps on the, it was an older chap and a younger chap, and they were playing alongside us on one of the tables, and one guy was saying, oh, I've had a bit of a, you know, sort of stressful morning, I've been rushing around doing this, that and the other. And he said, oh, and his friend said, well, don't worry, you're here now, have a bit of snooker therapy. I said it to you straight away, Phil. I said, oh goodness, you know. But I said, a bit cynical of me, I said, I feel like I need therapy because of snooker. It's a bit of a difference. But I did love that line. But it is, no, it isn't it? I mean, we joke about being, I don't like the heat anyway, so as much as I say it's silly for me, I wouldn't be outside in this hot sun. I'd be in the shade, and I'd be out more in the evening. It's not my cup of tea. But, I mean, there's an element of humour about it. But at the same time, the lads in there, and it was, I say lads, it was mostly lads, wasn't it, today, as it happens. But they were enjoying themselves, and, you know, the tables were mostly full from the minute I got there about 11:30, quarter to midday, and it's now, well, gone 4 o'clock, coming up to 5 o'clock actually here, and it was busy all the way. So that's, you know, there are fewer clubs than there used to be, and that's got to be said as well. But just a good healthy sign, eh?
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I think that's the thing. So you have to remember when you're playing snooker, because obviously it's an incredibly frustrating game at times, but it's supposed to be fun. And a lot of pros, you sort of have to, well, pros have to remind themselves about that a lot, about how you know, it's a game that they like playing and it's fun. So when you say it's snooker therapy, sometimes you could go and play for a while and do your head in, but try and enjoy it at least, and at least take the good things. But yeah, that was funny when, I think it might have been his dad or even his granddad, that guy, but it's always nice to see. But yeah, no, shout out again to that club. It was busy throughout, doing really well.
Yeah, I thought it might have been his dad at one time. When they were talking, it seemed more like mateys. I couldn't be sure. Listen, some sons and dads are very matey, of course. So it was great to see those guys, and I had a good time. I did make you laugh a little bit before we were on the air, because I was saying, I think the snooker gods had their say. They seem to, I say, want me to win. I'm not sure about that, but they seem to be a couple of those late ones winning the draws. But I was saying, you know, they've helped me. They couldn't help Jimmy all those years ago. And I'd actually rather they help Jimmy, really.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I couldn't say. No, I certainly don't put my loss down to luck at all. If there was luck on both sides, it even out. I certainly don't feel aggrieved by the snooker gods. I'll be praying to them as always. I won't be cursing them.
Brilliant. Well, one more word before we leave. I'm not saying that the music was old, Phil, but at one stage, Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny Yellow Polka Dot Bikini was on the jukebox. So I was uttering the phrase "one for the teenagers" a few times, as I know I want to do.
Yeah, there was quite a lot of old stuff. Although there was also, it felt very Manchester two or three times when Oasis came on, and they seemed to turn the volume up for "Don't Look Back in Anger" and stuff, which I was really enjoying.
Yeah.
Just felt very authentic being here. So yeah, no, I'm fine with the old tunes. That's all right. But then it was really quite unpredictable, wasn't it? Then it would suddenly go silent for about 15 minutes, deadly silent, and then it would burst back in with a very sort of early 80s track at full volume. So it was a little bit unpredictable, but quite entertaining nonetheless.
It was a real snooker experience. We couldn't have wished for a more authentic snooker day in many ways. And, well, Phil, we can't be talking, much as I'd like to talk about Tony Meo for a long, long time, I think it is now time, 20-odd minutes in, to move on and perhaps talk other snooker matters. Well, we mentioned qualifying. I think there were a few more matches. I've just got our friend snooker.org up here. A few more Wuhan qualified after we last spoke, Phil. I'll turn this towards you so we can both have a look at it. And well, it was a good win for Ian Burns, wasn't it? Beat Ricky Walden 5-3. And looking at else here, Liam Highfield had a thumping 5-1 win against Jimmy White. John Higgins had no problems. He beat Dylan Emery at 5-1. Really good match. Marco Fugel gets Hossein Vafai. Marco winning that 5-4. And, well, we enjoyed the Wuhan Open, but yeah, Marco Fu, and I'll say that's a real notable one.
Yeah, that's not a catching first round, isn't it? Qualifying match. I mean, Marco Fu being down at 100 and odd in the world is such an outlier, isn't it? Because obviously he's not nearly as consistent or as good, really, as he used to be, but he can obviously turn it on when he wants. Not when he wants. I'm sure he'd want to more often, but he can turn it on sometimes. So yeah, a bit of a shocker of a draw of a saying there. I watched a bit of Burns against Walden, actually. Walden gave a table leg thump at one point, which showed how frustrated and not like him, really. But then I also saw a clip doing the rounds on Twitter, a video clip of an interview with BBC Lancashire with Ian Burns. He's from Preston. So that's a nice little bit of coverage. There's someone who probably doesn't get a lot of mainstream interviews, so good to see stuff like that. But yeah, there was some interesting stuff going on. Another one for Steve McGuire, I can see on there. It was another week of qualifiers. The first of fives feel significantly more significant than first of fours. Do you know what I mean?
They do.
There's only one more frame for the win, but they feel a lot bigger, don't they?
And it's only one away from first to six, and I always seem to reference in my head. That Graham Dott, who once said they were proper matches. I thought, well, if Graham Dott's saying they're proper matches, Phil, then you know we have something going there. should say English Open qualifying is going on as we speak. Just having a look at some of the live scores here, and maybe get some of the results up as well from throughout this week. Phil, my snooker.org etiquette here is pretty poor, isn't it? But eventually, I'm helping us out there by getting it up, and maybe we'll have a look through some of these. I mean, well, Ricky Walden soon bounced back. He had a thumping 4-0 win. You said about it's quite unpredictable. He's thumping 4-0 win against Jordan Brown. That's kind of what the season's like so far, isn't it? A little bit, you know. I mean, perhaps inevitable at these early stages, but the result's kind of unpredictable. There was no problems for Zhao Guodong. He beat Tian Pengfei 4-1, and Wan Sejun had a win, thumping win 4-0 against Aaron Hill, and Dylan Emery beat Nokhon Sankan. That's one that comes to mind.
That's a great win, yeah.
4-2, and I guess it's the 8th today. That would have been this afternoon then.
Yes, it was, yeah, Friday afternoon, yeah. Yeah, it's really hard. I mean, Walden is such a good case study there. I mean, slow, then he actually did all right at the European Masters, then looked poor again. Then to beat Jordan Brown 4-0, that's a great result. Yeah, looking at those games. I actually watched a bit of Louis Heathcote play Rory Thor, played really well there. Gary Wilson against Pang Shun Shu was a stinker of a first rounder for both them as well. And a good win for Gary, actually, because he's had a slow start to the season.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's done well to win that 4-3. The top 16 sort of go straight to venue, but then you can really get some. And another one there, Zhu Yulong against Ben Wollaston. No one's going to be jumping. Neither of them are going to be happy with that first round draw. Ben's usually so reliable winning those first rounders, but Zhu Yulong won that one. But Julien Leclerc, I've seen now. I watched a bit of that actually. Yeah, he beat Jiang Jun 4-0. He's a powerful player. I think I tweeted that he gives everything a good whack. And, you know, that's. It's not always a good thing, is it? You're not supposed to smash everything into the back of the pocket, but that thud of at the back of the pocket of the leather, Leclerc is very reliable for producing that very nice sound. He powers it in. He looked really good there. The young Belgian lads, add that to Ben Mertens beating Sean Murphy in the Wuhan qualifiers as well. The two of them are increasingly looking very good.
Yeah, definitely. Bad result for Joe Perry again, unfortunately, losing 4-1 to Mark Davis. And looking at some of the other results here, Martin Gould got himself through, beating John Astley 4-2. And same with Fire, no problem on this occasion, beating Liam Graham 4-0. And maybe let's move days then and see what's involved.
Liam Pullen played really well. Sorry, just saw that on the screen.
Yeah.
He beat the American Ahmed. Ahmed Al Sayed. But I think he made a big break in all four of those frames, winning 4-0. And Anthony McGill, because he'd lost. The English Open was only his third game of the season, and he won it. But he'd lost his previous two. And the second one in Wuhan was Ishpreet Singhchadha, the new Indian player on tour. He does look good, but it was a shock to beat McGill. So he did well to get his first win on the board against Himanshu Jain there to get to Brentwood. And actually, while we were playing earlier, I mentioned that Maguire-Wells game, didn't I? Because that was quite remarkable. It was a good game. Went to the deciding frame, 3-3. And then Maguire got a quite remarkable fluke on his first red. And then cleared the table. 131 total clearance. Unbelievable stuff, really. Yeah. Wells has played well all game. He's had a good season so far. That's the thing. If you get a fluke, you know, sorry, mate. That was lucky for me, but make the most of it if you can. And that was making the most of it.
I don't know what made me think of this. It's not exactly linked, but great timing from you. You've got a red and a black. What did you say? I fancied a max there. I think you missed the next red. You said to me, straight face, Phil. That's proper comedy. That's what you do. Deadpan. Anyone out there interested in comedy? It's all about deadpan. I fancied a max there.
Well, yeah. I think that was the one frame. I potted a medium to long red and then a black, and then had a pretty straightforward red and would have been on the black. And I don't think we've mentioned, I think the high break of the day was 70, your 17.
Yeah, I think it would have been. I did get a third red, and I had a chance for another black, I think, didn't I, as well? Memory serves, or I had a chance for another colour. Was it?
Yeah.
Was it a third black I had a chance for? I did.
So, yeah.
I don't normally get five balls in a row. That was quite good.
So,
people listening to go, this is so lowbrow. Our friend Dave Tyndall's listening, who started making centuries. I'm literally like, doing high fives with the locals. They're getting five balls in a row. Yeah. I mean, it's just pretty low grade stuff.
We did sort of. I mean, we did get sort of a lot of three or fours balls in a row. I think I got 16. You got 17. But I mean, when I potted a red and black and said I fancied a max there, that's how ridiculous that suggestion was.
Yeah. No, because I think people have got that.
Any more than two reds and blacks, we were absolutely delighted.
Very much so. We should say Matt Sell, Alfie Burden film. Many people, I think, would have seen the video of that. We were discussing it earlier, weren't we, during our match, the Tony Meo, that Alfie Burden losing the frame on the three miss rule. It was crazy to do. I mean, it just happens. You do see it from time to time. He went for the same kind of relatively slow paced shot again. He was in an awful lot of trouble, clearly, but he didn't mix it up and lost the frame, and Selt won 4-2. I did see a few people saying that it wasn't the most appetising watch at times, because they're both loud, aren't they? They're both loud moaners, aren't they? In the nicest possible way, as many snooker players are, they'll both call each other out. You know, not each other out, but they'll call themselves out. But that's important. Yeah. They'll both say, "Oh, good shot, mate." You know, that sort of thing. They'll do that. And a bit of a painful watch, really. But you know, because I think they're always awful, really. But we should mention, Dave Gilbert, who beat Dean Young 4-1. And looking at the other results here, Alan Taylor's picked up a few good results early this season. He beat Jack Jones 4-3.
Great result there.
Yeah, terrific. And you mentioned McGuire and Wells, Chris Wakelin, friend of the podcast, who isn't these days, beat Lou Howshan 4-1. Stephen Hendry, who, he's still playing snooker, but he lost 4-0 to Fergal O'Brien, and Jackson Page 4, Ken Doherty 0. Jackson giving a much older man there a bit of a, not, I'd say lesson. I think he was a former world champion, a lesson, but he certainly got the better of him in handsome fashion there.
I didn't see that game, but yeah, that was a resounding win, as was against Stephen, really. I think a notable one there, just looking at the results, Lily beating Tepchaya 4-1 is quite unexpected. And also, Zhang Ander 4, Ben Burton's 0. Zhang Ander, one of the hardest to predict players. Because when he's playing well, he's great, but he could lose any first round. Merton's, in his previous game, beat Murphy. So I'd imagine Merton might have been favourite for that. Lose 4-0. I think Zhang actually made a load of breaks in that as well, so he played really well. There is a handful of players on tour like that, isn't there? They can do anything, and they can lose to anyone, they can beat almost anyone. Yeah, it's great. And just very unpredictable. He had that stat for a while where he'd been to the Crucible 3 times but never been in the top 64 in the rankings, which is actually very difficult to do considering the ranking points you get for getting to the Crucible. And that just shows how unpredictable he is. He can pull off all sorts of results but lose to anyone at any time. So as I say, there's a handful of players like that, but Zhang Ander certainly fits into the horrible to predict category.
Definitely, you're right to pinpoint those breaks here. I just checked myself. 101, 59, 56, 55, and Ben Mertens really didn't trouble the scores too much in the match at all, so excellent stuff from him, good scoring, and interesting set of results. Qualifying continues, live on Discovery, and of course we're building up to now, Phil, aren't we, to what we talked about in some detail last time, which is the Shanghai Masters underway Monday. Really looking forward to it, aren't we? Some cracking action. We said it before, loads of, you know, top players in the morning for us, so interesting. And but we're glad, aren't we? Because, you know, we've got to say it, we're so lucky here, we're spoilt, we don't want all the events to be here, far from it. We want to spread the wings. We're delighted that the sport's going back to the Far East. And snooker over cornflakes, Phil, in the old Selina Scott and Frank Boff slot. That's one for the teenagers.
I mean, that's beyond me, but yeah, I'll trust you on that one. Yeah, I think I looked at this the other day, and I think I'm right in saying there's sort of three sessions. One is a very early morning, probably most people here wouldn't be getting up for that, but there's one at sort of breakfast time, there's one at sort of mid-morning, so we do get to watch a lot of the action, actually quite nice times for us. Although, having said that, I always forget that I'm a journalist that works from home, so I can do this all the time. A lot of people are stuck in offices and can't necessarily watch snooker at 10 in the morning. But if you have the chance to watch it, I think they're at not too bad a time. So, yeah, no, really looking forward to that. It's always sort of a big, glitzy, glamorous, classy event. So, yeah, a departure from playing those qualifiers in a cubicle in front of no one in Leicester, which, you know, does a job, but it's not quite the Shanghai Masters, is it?
No, it isn't. But for now, Shanghai round the corner, English Open qualifying continues. And we should say, you are listening here to Talking Snooker with Phil Hague and Nick Metcalf. And we are coming to you live from Manchester, where we just played the Tony Meo Trophy. Who won that again? No, I'm joking. That's not my style. That's not nice.
That's absolutely is your style.
Brilliant. That, yeah, touche. Touche, Phil Hague. Let's move on. It's your views, isn't it? It's and Phil Spivey. I feel bad now. I shouldn't have done it. I shouldn't have done that. It's Phil Spivey first up here. Hi, Nick and Phil. I'm writing to show appreciation for two of your recent episodes. The one with John Higgins was exceptional. One of the most enjoyable snooker interviews I've ever heard. I could have listened for another few hours. I particularly appreciated the way you handled the discussion about John's suspension in 2010. It was very tactfully done. You allowed John to open up about his side of the story, but also treated him with respect and dignity in not pushing him to say more than he was comfortable with at this point. It will certainly be interesting if the full story is ever revealed. Your whole interview with him was a credit to your profession. I also enjoyed the episode with Chris Wakelin. It's always interesting to hear the perspective of players who are not at the very top of the rankings. To me, Chris exemplifies the strength in depth on the main tour. He is such a good player, an excellent break builder on his day, yet his record at reaching the latter stages of tournaments is quite modest. That is no criticism of him, but it shows how hard it is to win tournaments if a player as good as him struggles to get beyond last 16s, etc. Again, though, you really got the best of him. Let's hope his shootout victory is the start of better things. Well, I think we think it will be. We'd love to hear from other players, Phil says, who are perhaps not as well known to the general public. Keep up the good work, guys. Well, thank you for that, Phil. Yeah, we do try and have a mixture, don't we? Some of the players that we think will get better and better in the years to come, some of the, you know, biggest stars in the game, but we're really grateful for that. And I think we are proud of the John Higgins episode, Phil. I think it's probably my number one, just about taking the place of the John Virgo episode. We did have to think long and hard, didn't we, about how we approached those events of 2010, and I think we're generally satisfied with how we did that, and we're glad to hear your compliments, Phil. They do mean a lot to us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Phil's regular emailer. Always talks a lot of Spence, especially when he's saying how great we are. So, yeah. No, I thought they were both a lot of fun to do. John was fantastic, wasn't he? He's one of those people that we've heard him interviewed, you know, endless times, haven't we? He's been around for so long, but I think it was nice to get such a long amount of time with him. It was very generous of him. And yeah, Chris was great. Barry was great last week, I thought. So yeah, no, we're always treated to have these guys on, very generous with their time, and you know, hard not to like, I think, most players. Thanks for that, Phil. It's Adam Fisher. Hi, Nick and Phil. Long time listener, first time writer. Super podcast. Question for you both. With a lack of snooker related books out there, would you consider writing a snooker book in the future? If so, what about? If not, what as yet unwritten snooker books would you like to read or encourage others to write about? Thanks, chaps. All the best, Adam. Personally, I'd love to write a book at some point. I still feel sort of relatively new in this industry, so not in any rush to do it. But yeah, I'd love to do one at some point. I'm not sure what about. Have you any thoughts on this?
I've got thoughts on what I'd be interested in. I don't feel inclined to do a snooker book. I must be honest. At this current time, I mean, that I guess that might change. But no, so certainly for me, and no particular plans at all. But I have to say, this is just a personal thing. I think you know me long enough now, and know me well enough, Phil. I do love the sort of broadcasting side of most sports. So that would be something that I would love to sort of just find out more about, I think, and you know, the various sort of tidbits and bits of information over the years, and the various people that have done it, some of the forgotten names. Like, I think, you know, just things like Shaw Taylor. I mean, I joke about one for the teenagers, but Police 5, a very, very old programme that, you know, I used to watch as a boy, and we all did. Yeah, commentating on snooker, just little things like that. I love the television side of it, who's presented, the different channels, how it started. Obviously, you know, it started with Pot Black, but how it developed. And, you know, that's something that I would be particularly, you know, interested perhaps to sort of someone to delve more into. But, yeah, we should say, you know, of course, remind people, Phil, that while there is a dearth generally of books, not this year. We're very lucky, aren't we? We've had everyone, those three big writers that have going to test myself now, Phil. Luke G. Williams, of course, and our good friend
Brendan Cooper
and John Skilbeck, who have all written really good books, all enjoyable in their own right, so that we encourage you all to look up that. Of course, Brendan philosophising about all kinds of parts of life, isn't he? And it's really a really wonderful book. Luke G. Williams writing about Patsy Houlihan, and John Skilbeck about the 1982 World Championship and that win for Alex Higgins. So, listen, and we know David Hendon, our good friend and colleague, is writing one, so that's bound to be a, you know, an outstanding tome with everything Dave touches. You know, tends to, you know, just have the mark of excellence. So we look forward to that. But you're right, and Brendan does explore, doesn't he? And he did when he came on with us, why that might be. It is a frustration, because I know I follow a range of sports, and some of the sports I would think are equal in terms of sort of standing and history have a lot more literature. It's one of those things, but it's been corrected in recent times, it should be said, to some extent.
Yeah, and they've all three of those guys you just mentioned been excellent guests on this podcast, and really good stuff from those guys. I'm in no stage of any of that, but certainly, I'd be disappointed if I ended a career without a book about something. I really want to do that at some point. No specific ideas at the minute, but because I agree with what Brendan was saying. He made that point when he wrote his book that we're not blessed with loads and loads of snooker books, and I think there probably should be more. Whether that be, you know, autobiographies, that's the obvious one. But he took it from such a unique angle. That Deep Pockets was amazing on that front. The question, if one of us would like to, then certainly from my point of view, I would like to, and I would intend to at some point in my career, but no time soon. But at some point, I'm sure that'll happen.
Good man. Let's move on to Martin Eccles then, who says, "Hi, gentlemen. Just a quick reminder to say how brilliant your podcast is. The longer ones, the better. Anyway, another new book, Phil. I didn't really know about this, I have to say. I'm reading the new book, Snooker's Bad Boys. Oh, yeah. A great read with some really interesting stories with the greats of the game, from Higgins to Davis and beyond. A must read for us snooker nuts. Regards, Martin." Well, we've had some bad boys over the years in this sport. We feel we're not sport for choice when it comes to bad boys.
No, I didn't know about that book actually. I googled it when I saw that email, and there's Jimmy and Ronnie and Alex on the front cover, and I'm sure there's also tales of disrepute in there. But I'm sure, other than googling, looking at Amazon, reading some good reviews. To be fair, I've not read it, but good recommendation from Martin there. May well pick that one up. This is from Gaz147. It was such a shame to see John Higgins lose another big match on deciding frame to Judd Trump at the European Masters. As he said on the podcast, it really seems like his nerve might be going in those situations. Did we say that? We may have said that. Mark Williams seems to be the same. Do you think we'll start seeing it more with Ronnie O'Sullivan too? I think we have seen. I mean, we've seen them lose big. John and Mark lost quite a few big games in deciding frames, haven't they? Very close games. I don't think we haven't seen that so much from Ronnie. I suppose that's the question. Do you think that's going to come? I don't know. I can't really. There'll be some time to bring this up, but I can't remember too many times Ronnie seems to buckle to pressure. Can you think of an obvious occasion of that?
Not really. I mean, he's been shocked. He lost to Jordan and Fan and didn't deliver in those deciders when nearly everyone would have said he would have done. But that's not buckling. That's just losing to good performances.
Yeah, I don't remember him sort of missing a shot there.
No.
It's like, oh, well, he's bottled it there. And
no.
Like
that. Quite the opposite in some ways. I mean, those World Championships he won, he wasn't at his peerless best for a lot of 20 or 22, really. I mean, he came from behind loads in 20. Ding, Mark Williams, Selby famously in the semi. And this last one, John, he knuckled down, really. I mean, I think, in fairness, I did say that people are starting to say that John's losing that sort of high-level nerve. And I said, I think that's fair to say that's probably a case for that now, actually, because he's losing a lot of them. Mark Williams has lost a lot. I mean, it does happen. I mean, if you go back throughout their career, there'll be times when they've lost a few deciders in a random time when they were much younger. So I think I'd still want to see even more evidence, actually, before we start totally writing them off. But I also do think that high-level nerve and killer instinct probably will go. That's just inevitable. It sounds silly, but it reminds me, I don't know why I've got Neil Fowles in my head. I think when he joined us, he was sort of saying that this applies across all life, really, that when you get older, sadly, which it wasn't the case, you do worry about a lot more. You're so much more fearless. I feel it in my own self, you know. Sort of so much more fearful and risks are much harder.
So they say that the fearlessness of youth, isn't it?
I think so. So it's a bit of that, but no, we haven't seen it so much with Ronnie. We might do, but I think what we should say as well, Ronnie's obviously won two of the last four world titles. Williams has won big events in recent times. Higgins won the Players' Championship in 21 and has reached a hatful of finals over the last couple of years. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, they're still doing very, very well, as you rightly said about John a couple of weeks ago on here. You know, his worries he voiced to us about the top 16, well, that's not going to be a worry for him. If he carries on playing like he is, even in these early weeks of the season, he'll be absolutely fine on that regard. And let's move on then to Daniel, who says, I'm going to both the British Open at Cheltenham and English Open in Brentwood. I'm planning to go to the UK and York too. It feels like ages since there were tournaments to go to, especially as the Championship League is behind closed doors. Really looking forward to being in the snooker crowd again. And I was thinking, you know, it's right, Matt, because it's sort of getting on for half a year, really, since Sheffield now. So many fans that, you know, here in the UK, I know we're spoilt, but nevertheless, there's been a gap. Really looking forward to going back to tournaments again this autumn and into the winter. And I was thinking, I'm hoping to make it down to Brentwood on one of the afternoons or evenings there, because I feel, as we know, obviously to say, we love talking about it, you know, on this podcast, you know, nattering away about it when we see each other, and television's wonderful way of covering the game, but nothing beats being at the tournaments.
No, definitely, yeah. And it's a shame to qualify. I know people can go to some of the qualifiers, they'll go to the UK, it's the world qualifying, it's brilliant to go to. But, yeah, qualifying does take quite a long calendar, you know, there's sort of a bit of smoke and mirrors when powers that be say, oh, the calendar's very full now. And actually, quite a lot of it is two or maybe four tables at a time, qualifiers behind closed doors. So it's pretty low-key stuff. So it would be nice if people could go in there and watch some of that. Because, you know, some of the games we talk about there, you know, Hussein Mafai against Marco Fu, people would pay to go and watch that live, wouldn't they? That doesn't need to be behind closed doors. And the weirdest thing about it, really, is that when you watch it, there's sort of two rows of seats. So there's places, I mean, there must be reasons why they don't do it, but there are seats for people to go and watch, even if it's 40, 50 people at a time, you know. So it would be nice for the whole season to be able to, for fans to go and watch. But yeah, big tournament's coming up though, so there's plenty of opportunity for that. I'm going to be there on the Monday in Cheltenham, actually, going down the opening day of the British Open. It's a stellar day. Huge names in action throughout, as it is on the first day in Brentwood, which I might be at too, but I'm not sure. But I'll certainly be at Cheltenham. So yeah, plenty to look forward to there. Well, we've spoken about loads about the opening day of Home Nations, just the top 16. What a day that is for often a tenner or 15 quid or something. And yeah, that opening day of the British Open looks great as well. So yeah, I'll be at least for that, if not both. So hopefully see you there. It's from Rob. He says, the live scoring on the WSC website has been a total mess so far this season. A couple of pundits have already pointed out that a shiny new system will be in place for the UK Championship and have suggested it will probably be working perfectly for that. It feels like certain events are looked after far better than others. Yeah, fair enough. I mean, there's no real defence to this live scoring problem. It's been pretty atrocious, hasn't it? And throughout the summer, we were hearing, oh, it's going to be in place by November. It's just, I found that so tin pot. You know, if you get your new website, get a new scoring system, we had a month, 2 months off after the World Championship. That should be more than enough time to sort something like that out. To say, from, you know, the World Championship ends at the start of May, for you to be saying, well, this is going to be sorted by November, it's just not really good enough. In my mind, that is a long time. And if it took more money throwing at the problem, then it should have done. You know, for it to be not working or half working, it's not very good for quite a number of months until what is deemed as the next big tournament, the UK Championship. Even though there's quite a few what we would consider big tournaments before that, pretty poor in my mind. And it's just another of these things where, you know, when you consider yourself like a big global sport, I don't think any other sport in that category would come out with, oh, we're doing this, it'll be ready in 4 months. It's shabby stuff, really, isn't it? So, yeah. We often do, I think a lot of criticisms about things are harsh. Will Snooker do try the best on those things. And we will defend them when they need defending. But I think that whole live scoring thing has been pretty awful. So I'm not going to defend too many people on that myself.
Well, as that. Defend the indefensible, that's around in a popular radio show, isn't it? Fighting Talk, and that probably falls into that category with this. No, it's not been good enough, definitely. And there's no massive excuse for it, really. And yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it's up and running properly for the UK. Let's hope that is the case. I mean, I know others, and some very good judges, have said that there is a feeling that sometimes WST would pay a bit more, you know, attention and a bit more due love and care over some events rather than others. It's a difficult thing to, I mean, sometimes that goes to, not conspiracy theory, but it's quite difficult to kind of prove that necessarily. I mean, look at the Tour Championship, look how hard they're working to promote that, moving it to Hull, okay, it didn't work, now moving it here where we are in Manchester, you know, so they are working on other events as well. And you know, Northern Ireland has been built up brilliantly, and the Welsh has got great history, we know that, and they're moving that around looking for a good place. So I don't think it's, you know, but I do think the Triple Crown events are probably the ones looked after the most of all. I mean, they're our biggest events, you'd argue, so it's a bit of a circle. I guess some people would say, well, they're the biggest and the best because they've worked on more. But yeah, I mean, what I will say, Phil, you know, putting any cynicism aside, let's hope it really is good for November. I I'm going to look on the view, I think it probably will be, yeah. When it comes in, because, you know, all we want to do as snooker fans and snooker people is just a couple of clicks, ideally one, but maybe two, and then just look at the latest scores, then get on with the rest of our day.
Yeah, yeah. I said that before, it's not much to ask for, you know. I think we're beautifully served in some ways, you know, being able to watch every match qualifying on the stream, a really good stream, is great. You know, not too long ago, that wasn't an option to watch one table, never mind every match from the first round in a qualifying game. So in some ways, things have progressed brilliantly, but that seems to have regressed. And we know what's happened, like they've got rid of the old system, they're waiting for the new system to come in, but you know, that just seems, it's not good to have months of a gap between this new system coming in. You know, that should, for such a massive organisation, supposedly hugely successful global sport, there shouldn't be that big gap. So yeah, I'm sure it will be. It has definitely improved since start of the season, when, you know, it didn't work at all. So it's going the right way. I'm sure it will be fine by November. But yeah, it's no one could argue it's not been good enough. I think that's just a fact.
I think so, yeah. We've got a couple more here, Phil. This is from Mark. Hello, Nick and Phil. I am from Minneapolis in the USA. I discovered snooker back during COVID when I was looking to sharpen my pool skills and a Ronnie O'Sullivan 147 video was recommended to me on YouTube. I found the game very intriguing and started following it here and there, but didn't give it much mind. One fateful Sunday afternoon changed that, however, when I made the decision to watch a long match for the first time. The match I chose to watch was the 2019 Tour Championship semi-final between Ronnie and Judd, as it was recommended to be one of the best matches of the last 5 years. It was a match that had everything from centuries and total clearances to three frames in a row going over half an hour, and even Ronnie tying his shoes. Since I watched that match, I've been hooked ever since and love it almost as much as American football. Before I leave you two, I do have one question. Has World Snooker attempted to host events in my country, or do they have any plans currently? Travelling to England for a tournament isn't on the cards for me at the moment. Anyway, I thoroughly enjoy the podcast. Keep up the excellent work. Great to hear from you, Mark. We love any international listeners, particularly from the United States. I got to know Minneapolis well for my recent visits there for big sporting events. So great to hear from you. And as for events in America, Phil, I mean, we often hear whispers, don't we, and positive noises about a possible tournament there. I wouldn't be surprised if we do hear about one in the hopefully, you know, not too distant future. When that is specifically, you know, we'll have to wait and see. We do, of course, have a successful women's event now at the Ox Billiards Club in Seattle. And we should say, Phil, we got a nice message, didn't we, from David Burney during the live commentary of the US Nationals over recent days. Can we say we've cracked America, or is that too strong?
We've made an appearance on American airwaves. If you can say that, it's YouTube. But from America anyway, but yeah. Another great shout out to David Burney, and I think everyone on this who listens to this podcast knows my love of trophies. The US Nationals had a delightful trophy, I don't know if you saw it. But yeah, it was great. So yeah, in terms of a tournament there, I don't think we've had one ever. I don't know, but apart from the women's who are doing a great job over there in Seattle. But yeah, there's been murmurings, haven't there? There's been talk. I think that was one of Dave Hender's predictions at the start of the season that might get a tournament over there. So Dave usually knows what he's on about. So you know, it might not be too far away. But you know, the fact that people in America listen to this podcast shows that there's growing interest over there. I suppose that's got to be encouraging, isn't it?
Very encouraging, and we love hearing from our American listeners. You know, there's no reason. I think I said it before. You know, I'm not an expert, clearly, but I do watch quite a bit of American sport. I spend quite a bit of time in America. I don't buy this idea that the American psyche cannot deal with longer sport, long-form sport. They follow baseball. It goes on for hours. They play 160 games a season. You know, there's an absolutely... Yeah, OK, there is sometimes a bit more of a decisive verdict kind of culture to their sports, which is why they always say, oh, they wouldn't be able to cope with draws in test cricket. But this thing they can't do with long form sport in America is in my opinion totally wrong. So yeah, no reason why, you know, Americans cannot embrace snooker more. It's a hugely competitive market in the United States. Let's be clear, there are so many massive sports competing with each other. But listen, you know, you've got to start somewhere, and as you say, we do have listeners, and also and Dave's podcast regularly has correspondence from the United States. So we say hello to you all. Great to have you listening stateside. And yeah, keep up the good work in your own communities, in your own, you know, states over there, in kind of spreading the word. And, you know, Paul, unfortunately, Paul, which I'm nothing against Paul, it's a Q sport, is massive there. That's always taken such a sort of priority field, yeah. Paul Halls and people playing the game. And that's great, but we just want a little bit more on the bigger tables.
Yeah, and yeah, it's I don't think we're about to crack into like make it a massively big thing, but darts has done very well recently there. You know, they've always played darts over there, but you know, PDC made big strides quite recently, had tournaments at Madison Square Garden. They got some big journalists who don't normally cover darts to get into it, and yeah, they've made huge strides over there. So you know, darts gets compared a lot in some markets, but it's obviously completely different. But you know, if they could do it, snooker can to potentially as well. So yeah, it'd be great to see. We'll move on to Matthew, who's a bit of an essay here, so we'll dig straight in. Hi both, hope you're keeping well. Just some thoughts on the never-ending Crucible debate. I've been to the Crucible many times over the years, being fortunate to hail from Sheffield. Despite having been going since 2000, it never ceases to be a thrill or privilege to sample snooker at our greatest tournament in what is our most iconic venue. Many others who have been going longer than I will say the same, I'm sure. As I've said before, the more I read, the more I hear on the grapevines about the potential of leaving the Crucible, the more concerned that I become. It's now firmly in the mind of RST to move the championship away from Sheffield. I, being from Sheffield, naturally don't want to see the World Championship leave Sheffield. And I do think that it will be a sad day if, I daren't say when, the tournament does leave the one place non-snooker followers recognise in our sport. Sheffield clearly doesn't have a God-given right to save the tournament, obviously, and there is potential that it came to it. There are some venues which could take the World Championship and it would be a potentially positive move. The Tempodrome would be a good shout if the tournament left the UK, for example. When the PDC moved their World Championship from the Circus Tavern to Alexandria Palace in 2008, it didn't seem to do their event much harm at all. Moving the World Championship only will work if it's to the benefit of snooker in general. Whilst finance is important, it's not the end of all arguments. A World Championship will only be a good proposition if there is a crowd to support it and won't be a huge attraction to the casual viewer if there are a handful of souls around the table, regardless of if the event gets a seven-figure first prize. As I said on Twitter, this may be an unfair criticism of WST, but it almost seemed to me this time WST seemed to be trying to manoeuvre circumstances into making a move away from the Crucible palatable, seemingly wanting the foot in both camps as to move the tournament, but reluctant to cop the blame and thus increasing their demands required on Sheffield as a host city, despite what Sheffield City Council already commits to the event, up to a level which Sheffield cannot reach, thus giving WST the reason they need to move the tournament. Or am I just creating a conspiracy theory? Alas, the old Crucible debate I don't think is going to end anytime soon. Best wishes, Matthew. Well, a lot of fair points there, Nick, wasn't there?
Very much so. I've got to know Matthew, actually, in recent times. Really, always interesting on social media. One of those guys that I think absolutely loves sport. Just an absolute undistilled love of sport, which I do appreciate, actually. And, obviously a proud Sheffield man, but... some nuanced views there. I mean, look, I've never made any suggestion otherwise or hidden the fact that I'm a Crucible man, and I sort of am through and through, really. My issue is the same. I've never been presented with what I think is a really, really good or special alternative, and I understand the increasing noise about it going there, and I joked on Twitter recently about how it's very quickly seems to have gone from that we're never moving here in a million years to it's inevitable, it's going to happen. I mean, yeah, it does seem like the noises are going that way. I'm not particularly happy about the links with Saudi Arabia. I'm not happy about that in any sport, really. And I can already sense, there's a feeling of, well, if nobody else is going to take a moral stand, then why should we? But I suppose the way I'd turn that round is say why shouldn't we or why couldn't we? But listen, these are all, maybe as we come towards the end of this episode, maybe an issue we can explore more, in a future episode. But generally speaking, I'd like it to stay at the Crucible. I understand the reasons why people now think it's not a big enough venue. There's more money to be made elsewhere. It's down to money. It's down to money. While they might go to Saudi Arabia, it's all down to money. And not to pick on snooker, that's why golf are going there. And that's why these footballers are going for extraordinary money, Phil. Jordan Henderson will say it's not for money, but far be it. I think most of us don't quite... I mean, we're not inside his head, but a lot of us aren't buying that. Oh, do you know what I mean? It's a lot down to money. But it's not just about Saudi. We don't know where it's going to go. But I've always been a Crucible man through and through. I still am. But I understand that, rightly or wrongly, it does seem now that it might well go from there. When the contract's up, it'll be a wrench after half a century. But the same token, I also don't buy that. the event's finished and it'll never be special again, because, you know, that's not... One little thing I would like to say, and I've heard a couple of others say this recently, I said it myself, that we should also, while I'm saying I love the Crucible and I want it to stay there, we should get away from the idea that it's not, you know, it's like these other places like Lords and Wembley and Wimbledon. They're all absolutely entirely different examples in some ways, because they're unrecognisable from when I was growing up, Phil. Wembley's literally different. It's not the old Twin Towers stadium. It's a different stadium. Wimbledon is, you know, got a roof on centre and one now. They've been rebuilt. That's one in particular. Many of the other courts have been rebuilt. And apart from the members' end of the ground, when I first went to Lords decades ago, it's different. It's a different place. There are new stands. So the Crucible is the only place that's unchanged. And unfortunately, maybe in an ever-changing sporting world, it's not changed enough. And as we know, the old thing, Lords is a cricket ground. Wimbledon is a tennis venue. Wembley's a football venue. They are for those sports. The Crucible is not for snooker. It is for 17 days, and it's great when we're there. But rest of the year, it's a theatre for the people of Sheffield. I'm doing a lot of waffling here, Phil. Hopefully I'm making some sense.
No, absolutely, yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. But I think the point is what I've said on here before, and I think we agree that I think what we would like to see is just the Crucible adapt. And it wouldn't need to, you know, they're talking about wanting 2,500, 3,000 seats. I think if the Crucible could get in 500 more seats, then that would actually be enough to win the argument. If you could just adapt the Crucible to squeeze in two or three more rows of seats and some hospitality, then the powers that be would accept that and stay where they are, just a slightly bigger venue. I'm actually working on a piece of this. I spoke to someone at Sheffield City Council this week, and they're desperate to keep it. Sheffield are very keen to keep hold of the tournament. They're in discussions with WST about what needs to be done. I said to them, you know, I spoke to them about Barry Hearn doing that interview with Stephen Hendry, where he said he's asked them for a new venue. They were clear they've not had any formal request for a new venue, but it has come up in discussions. And they're working on it, and there's going to be a bidding process next 2025, I think, is when, because there's contracts in 2027. So it's actually, you know, there's a lot of talk now, but the when people have to present bids to hold the World Championship isn't until 2025, so we don't need to go into it too much yet. But they're certainly very much in discussions and thinking about it.
At the Crucible?
Well, yeah, at the Crucible or potential other options, you know. You know, they're not that far down the road of things. I know this sort of topic has become big, as it has been for a while, but it's big at the minute. But they were very much of, the person I spoke to was very much thinking that we've got a while to come up with our proposal, or more than one proposal potentially. But certainly Sheffield City Council are very keen to keep it there. I think what I reckon is that moving to Saudi Arabia, I actually can't see that happening for the World Championship, because Matru came up with that agreement with them to host the Saudi Arabia Masters there for 10 years. Now, we don't know what's happening with that, but it was a 10-year agreement. And that was for the Saudi Arabia Masters, and it was for the same prize when it was like less than the World Championship. And apparently Saudi Arabia were happy with that, to have their own tournament. Enormous prize money. So what would be the need to put the World Championship there? You know, if they've already come to that agreement.
Well, ambitions change, I would argue. I mean, they've been to host the World Cup.
What happened to this 10-year agreement that they'd signed, supposedly? If Matrim had convinced them to have that for 10 years, then there's no need for snooker to give them the World Championship. If they were happy to have a separate tournament with as good prize money, let them have that, of course. You know, like you said, I'm uncomfortable with going, having anything in Saudi Arabia. But, you know, I speak to a lot of snooker players who don't earn a lot of money. So I'm not going to, I wouldn't argue against them having that opportunity to go and play for £500,000 in the Saudi Arabian Masters. I would hate to see the World Championship there, but I'm fine with them having a separate tournament for the same money, which is just a different event. So I think if they've committed to Saudi Arabia to be able to host that, there's no need to have the World Championship there. And things change, but in my mind, can't see the World Championship going there because they've agreed to do whatever they want separately to that. So we'll see. But yeah, this will carry on for ages, isn't it? Because as I say, the bidding, the sort of tender process, is that the right word, tendering, is 2025, and then the contract's till 2027, so we've got a few more years of this chat.
Yeah.
But absolutely it's for sure that Sheffield definitely wants to keep it and will be working hard to keep it.
We really look forward to seeing that piece, Phil. Yeah, no, I'm sure that'll be very interesting. It sounds like more, you know, typically great work from you, but yeah, I mean, I said to before, I'm only one journalist, I made a little bit of an effort, maybe even more than a little bit, to not really delve too much into the Crucible during this year's tournament, because I thought it's just getting so dominant every year, and it's in a way to the detriment of our enjoyment of the tournament, I would argue. It did come up a bit later with Barry Hearn. That was, I think, around about the quarterfinal stage, so that's deep into the tournament, and of course we have to respond when Barry makes comments, so that's fine. But in general terms, you know, I didn't want this year to be, and I think mostly it wasn't, but obviously it's come up now, and yeah, it will continue to be a debate if you want to have your say. And but I do, you know, I think it is important to say as well that I would say the majority of snooker fans do want to stay at the Crucible, but I am seeing an increasing more the other side. It makes me think that maybe the other side felt a bit cowed for a while. That there are good, honest, great snooker people that have the other view, actually. Mm. That actually, no, it is time to maybe have a rotating world championship, or just to look at a bigger venue in the UK, maybe a very special one, well, who knows, here in Manchester or in London or whatever. And, you know, they should be allowed to say that. You know, one of the very good snooker journalists once said to me, I think, we have enough traditionalists to go around. I'm a traditionalist, we have enough of those. and that's kind of fair. I know I'm one, but you know, it's important that people are allowed to say that other view. It's not just everyone thinks it's just at the Crucible. Well, that's not the case. Yeah. You know, there are views on both sides.
Yeah, and it's the same thing that a lot of people have said, and there's no argument against this. If you want to move from the Crucible, fine, but what's the option? Just saying it should leave the Crucible to some mythical, great venue. You know, you need to present what is better. And you know, if there is a better option, then great. You know, I'm not. I want it to stay where it is, but I'm massively biased, being from Sheffield, living in Sheffield, loving the Crucible. But if someone put a presentation forward of why you could double the size, double the prize money, everything would be twice as good. You know, I'm not gonna just deny that. But no one's done that yet, have they?
No.
And until they do, you know, it's all just pie in the sky. And these places probably exist somewhere, but until someone shows it to us, then, yeah, you know, it's irrelevant, isn't it?
It is. You've got a train to catch to Sheffield, Phil. Quite soon.
I thought this might be a short one, but it's been going on. But yeah, we should probably
wrap up. Before we do, I've got to say, Phil, I have had the most extraordinary week. Interviewed Barry Hawkins on Tuesday, saw the Rolling Stones 5 minutes from my home on Wednesday, had an absolutely wonderful day and night yesterday with meeting Bernie Clifton, Bernie telling me gag after gag, which was absolutely wonderful. Also, I met Ricky Tomlinson as well, and Johnny Vegas, paying tribute and remembering the late great Sir Ken Dodd, who I adored, and I really enjoyed that at the Museum of Liverpool. That was wonderful. And now Phil Hague on Friday, I mean, that's it. And the Tony Muir Trophy, which I'm not going to do any silly things, because you still want it more than I have, 2-1. But I have finally got my hands on it. We should finish there and say thank you very much indeed for your company. I really have enjoyed it. I don't see you very often, so who knows when the next time will be. But thank you, sir. Have a good trip home on the train, and I'm heading to London. And we'll catch up next time to review the Shanghai Masters. It's going to be a great tournament.
Yeah, that's one to look forward to. Got a bit loud in here. No, it was a pleasure. I mean, we speak every week, we speak all the time, but very rare to see it in person. So, been a pleasure, been a great day, and congratulations on the worthy winner of the Tony Muir Trophy. Yeah, maybe we should look to stream next time, because there really was great drama. I mean, there's a lot of terrible snooker in there, but some good stuff, and really went... Everyone would have been gripped watching that final few seconds of that, so, yeah, enjoyable day, regardless of the result, and well done again.
I don't know if it's betraying too much of a secret, but Dave Gilbert said he might referee. We're both sort of saying, we can't have that.
No,
We just can't have that.
We had Dave Tindall refereeing last year, which... was fine. I mean, Dave's a very good player, but we could deal with that. But I think having a professional watch seven frames of that, I don't think it would improve the standard. That's the problem.
I don't think we can have someone that was one frame away from a Crucible final refereeing the tournament. I just don't think it's
and as good as Dave Tindall is, he's not that good.
No, he's not. See you next time.
Yeah, pleasure as always. Thanks for listening.
All the best, everybody. Thank you for tuning into us for this special episode live from Manchester. We'll catch up with you next time to look back on Shanghai. For now, from Phil and myself, cheerio. Sports Social Podcast Network.